This is Per Fagren, KBOO News and Public Affairs, and our guest is Stephen Zarlenga, who is with the American Monetary Institute, and he will be speaking Wednesday, May 24th, at the Central Library. That's 801 Southwest 10th, and starting at 5:15 p.m. until they close. And fittingly enough, the meeting will be held in the U.S. Bank meeting room. So, welcome to KBOO, Stephen.
Thank you, Per. It's great to be here again.
Mm-hmm.
We got together about 3 years ago.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to talk about? Monetary reform. So I know I've read some of your stuff, and it's very interesting.
Great.
You talk of money as a quote abstract social power. So
yes.
What is that?
The key thing is to understand that we all know we're being ripped off. We all know we're being had by the financial system. That in essence we're at war with it, or they're at war with us, but we're not fighting back really. But people don't understand how it's happened, and therefore how to fix it. Now, how it's happened has been through economics and through the misdefinition of money. And what they did for a long time, and this came back to the father of economics himself, Adam Smith, they misdefined money mm-hmm. as gold and silver by weight, as a crude commodity. And it's been long known from Aristotle's time that money is an abstract legal power and belonging to society. And by misdefining it in that way as gold and silver, in other words, as wealth, what they did was they assured that the power to control the money system, not just one's assets and one's property, but the money system would be in the hands of the wealthy. And that doesn't work because, as we know, as we can see looking around us, the wealthy just don't know when to stop.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know when enough mm-hmm. is enough.
Yes, now we're getting into psychology or abnormal psychology or something. But, we're no longer on the gold standard.
Thank God.
So now the government, how is money issued? The Federal Reserve kind of...
People think that money is issued by our government.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. It's issued... Basically, most of the money comes into existence when banks are making loans. That's where most of our money comes from. In the private banking system, mm-hmm. the Federal Reserve itself, it's ambiguously structured, but actually it's a privately controlled organization, and the 12 regional banks are privately owned by the member banks. So while the government is getting the blame for all of the financial problems that come up and continually gets the blame, it's not in control. That control has been taken through bribery and other bad actions by the banking system over a long period of time. And from 1913, when the Federal Reserve was created, it's been in totally private hands. The president gets to appoint the chairman of the Fed, but once they're appointed, they've got tremendous powers.
So they bring money into existence. When you go to the bank, you go to the bank for a loan, and they loan you $100,000. All of a sudden, that $100,000 is there, and it goes into the economic system. It came out of nothing, right?
It came out of nothing.
Uh-huh.
It's called a fractional reserve banking system, where they're allowed, for example, if the reserve requirement is 10%, and $10,000 goes into the banking system, they're allowed to loan out 90% of it, or $9,000.
Mm-hmm.
What happens then? The $9,000 goes into the system, and again, 90% of that can be loaned out, or $8,100. That goes into the system, 90% of that gets loaned out. If the reserve requirement is 10%, it means that if $10,000 goes in, this is very roughly speaking, $100,000 gets created in the banking system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are several major problems with this there. First problem that everyone can understand very easily is that why on earth should these private bankers be getting interest on the creation of money in our country? But when they make those loans, every time they create money, they're getting interest on the creation of money. That's a social function. The money has value because of our society, not because of the banks, because we're working, we're following laws, we're existing in a supportive legal framework and social framework. That's how money gets value. but the bankers have taken this over. Now, the other aspect of it, which I think is even more important than the earnings that they unfairly take out of it, is that the banking system then controls where the money goes. They really then end up directing the future of society, because that's determined by where the money goes. For example, they're putting most, or have about half the new creation of money, into real estate loans, and not for creating and building new real estate, which would create jobs and things of that sort. It's for purchasing existing real estate, and I'm not talking just about single-family loans. These are large projects that they like to do, because it's easy to do a big number in something like that. And that's what has created the real estate bubble, that they keep pouring money into that.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of feeds on itself, too, then. Pardon?
This real estate bubble kind of feeds on itself, in a way.
Exactly what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then they look at it and they say, see how smart we are, where we loan the money is going up and it's safe. You know, they're a joke.
What about the money that gets printed, you know, the actual the bills?
Well, the money that actually gets printed, there is that does come through the Treasury, but still it's in conjunction with a privately controlled banking system. So it's not that money actually gets printed by the private banks. It's more accurate to say that purchasing media, which is what's in your checkbook, it works the same as money. You write a check, it's going to be accepted the same as money. So, but technically, we call it purchasing media.
Now, I understand that, you know, in the last, I don't know how many years, more and more dollars have been put into circulation. The dollar is getting cheaper. And some people say that the reason for this is it's a way of getting out from all the huge debts that our government and everybody else has accumulated.
Well, keep this in mind. They're creating about $700 billion a year, mm-hmm. and it's going into the wrong things. It's not going into the things that are going to really help the people. Especially now, it's going into warfare, which is the worst possible place. That's what creates inflation, when it goes into warfare. Simply the creation of money going into good things, for example, that are productive, that create either infrastructure or create goods. You then have the goods. So you don't get the inflation. You understand? But mm-hmm. if you pour it into warfare, the stuff gets blown up.
And they have to make it. And it has to be replaced, too.
You get inflation. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the most serious charges we make against the banking system is that that's basically when they allow the government to get involved in creating money, has been for warfare. So the government then gets the blame for inflation. But where the money has not gone, we can tell you from the American Society of Civil Engineers does a study every year, and they grade our infrastructure, 10 different categories of infrastructure, from schools to roads, dams, all that stuff. And they give it a grade of D for what's supposed to be the last remaining superpower. And they estimate that $1.6 trillion is needed to bring our infrastructure up to safe levels, not perfect, good, great levels, just safe levels, $1.6 trillion. So that's where the money has not gone. And how important does that get? Well, you can ask the people of New Orleans. The money didn't go into their levees. It could have. And mm-hmm. instead of spending $12 billion to fix the levees, now we're faced with a bill of $350, $400 billion. To fix the mess that's been created. Right now, you're hearing about all this rain up in the Northeast, and that dams are under threat. Dams are overflowing, and some of the dams are in danger of bursting. If you have dams breaking in this country, I think people are going to begin to see, they're already seeing with New Orleans what a joke things are. We need to change this pair. We need to take back the control of the monetary system out of the hands of these characters they have no qualification to determine the future of society. There's nothing in their training. There's nothing in their background. There's nothing in their philosophy that should give them control over our society. All they can do, pair, is look at the bottom line. I call them bottom line feeders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to shake them off our backs.
So what would a rational money system do? What would it be like?
A rational money system would have the monetary power, which is the power to create new money, mm-hmm. which has to be done every year in a growing society, would be in the hands of the society through government, where with various safeguards, it would be managed in a manner that's neither inflationary or deflationary, that spends money into existence interest-free. For example, Katrina, the hurricane disaster. The latest examples, they're going to try to raise $250 billion in bonds to pay for the damage. Well, the $250 billion in bonds, anyone who goes to a town hall meeting knows that whatever the amount of the bonds are, after the interest, it's doubled.
Mm-hmm.
So you could save $250 billion right there by the government instead of borrowing the money, simply printing it and spending it into circulation. Now, what we recommend is, aside from an emergency like Katrina, that this be done nationwide on a per capita basis, and that it first be done into infrastructure expenditure. For example, the $1.6 trillion that the engineers say we're behind, that's a kind of a no-brainer. There's nobody who would tell you, no, we don't want to do the infrastructure. All they would tell you is, oh, we can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
We can afford it. We can create the money. Same way the American government can create the money, the same way that the banking system is creating the money out of thin air,
mm-hmm.
except we put it into things that make sense. It gets distributed across the country on a per capita basis, creates good jobs everywhere, rejuvenates government at every level through tax receipts on the new jobs and on the work that's being done, and we rescue our country from these creatures who are intent on dragging us into a 300-year war here, Per.
Mm. You know, I read a while ago about the island of Guernsey, which is a British possession, and it's off the coast of France.
Yeah.
And way back in 1816, they wanted to build a seawall.
Yeah.
And so instead of borrowing money from the banks to do it, they just issued their own money, and they paid for their seawall, and then, you know, they didn't owe anybody. They had their seawall, which is real wealth. Meanwhile, in other places, you know, where local governments borrowed from the banks to do these projects, I think there's one in Scotland that is still paying off that debt.
Yeah, it's incredible. One would look at this, you know, a few hundred years from now, they're going to look back at this and say, what possessed these people? It's, you know, we look back at earlier times and we say, what, they spent 100 years arguing how many angels are dancing on the head of a pin? You know, it's that kind of ridiculous situation. There are many examples in the past where the government has created money successfully. In fact, U.S. government, our government is always smeared. Oh, the government can't do that. You can't trust the government. Well, can you trust the bankers? Can you trust Enron? And in fact, when you actually look at the history shows that our government has an outstanding history creating money. For example, the colonial period. Hundreds of fiat paper monies were created during the colonial period, used very successfully. They rescued the country at one point, and there, in every case, there is never any colony that issued more money than their legislature officially authorized.
Mm-hmm.
We have a perfect record there. That has continued for the United States itself, not only the colonial period. You take the American greenbacks, or let's start with the Continental Currency. Continental Currency, 200 million were authorized. 200 million were printed. And what the Austrian economists don't tell you, these are the guys who are always smearing our own government, what they don't tell you is that the Brits came in and counterfeited billions and billions of our continental currency. They set up New York as a center for counterfeiting and offered the currency for the cost of the paper in order to defeat the revolution. Still, the currency carried us over 5.5 years to within 6 months of final victory against the world's greatest power. It gave us a country.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good example of fiat paper money. Tom Paine, the hero, the you know, the father of the revolution, said that it was a cornerstone of the revolution. You take the next governmental control of money was in the period after the first and second banks of the United States were brought down for their corruption, and the government issued its own paper money. They authorized $67 million. They only printed $37 million. It's not the picture that the economists give us of a government going rapid, going wild.
Mm-hmm.
The next case, the American greenbacks. Continentals gave us the country. The greenbacks let us keep it because during the Civil War, they were the key feature of the Civil War. $450 million were authorized. $450 million were printed. The false reputation, the smearing of government that comes down to us has the greenbacks as worthless paper money or inflation money. In fact, they exchanged one for one with gold.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand the Indians call the greenbacks frog skins.
Frog skins, really?
Frog skins, yeah.
That's clever.
But what about, you know, one thing I wonder about, you know, there's always talk that the dollar may crash. And if that happens, suppose the dollar does become kind of worthless, how would governments collect taxes in that, or would they at all?
Dollar is not going to become worthless.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of stuff that's being put out there by the gold bugs. People are investing in gold and gold shares, and those guys, the gold coin people, they're shameless in this kind of stuff. There's no rational expectation for the dollar to become worthless.
Hmm.
Not going to happen.
Okay.
For one thing, all the people out there who are paying mortgages,
mm-hmm.
they know that they're going to have to keep paying for those houses. I mean, there's no doubt in their minds. If the dollar became worthless, they'd get their house for free.
Well, that's right. So
you
this
think
is
that's going to happen?
Well, it would certainly help people who owe money. And if our government owes, trillions of dollars to foreign creditors, this is one way. This is the way the story goes. This is how they get out from under it. Otherwise, they might actually have to pay back that debt or do something or other.
We don't owe it to them
mm-hmm.
in the first place.
Oh, we don't? Okay.
No, here's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
In our trading with them, we're mm-hmm. buying their stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If we're really trading, they're supposed to turn around and buy our stuff.
Right.
And send the money back here.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they're playing this game where they're only selling us stuff and not buying any stuff from us and taking the money and investing it in our bonds. Okay? So if they want to get paid for those bonds, the government can simply print that money and pay them for the bonds. There's no problem. There's mm-hmm. not any question of bankruptcy with a government. It just doesn't happen. What we should do in that regard is stop paying foreign central banks interest on that money. And that would give them an incentive, instead of holding on to it, to turn around and come and buy stuff here. And if they were buying stuff here, then maybe some of these corporations would keep a few factories operating here.
Well, don't they need dollars to pay for oil? This is another big thing going on these days, that there's talk of some oil-producing countries to start selling for euros, which would be bad for the dollar, because presumably all the countries that buy oil have to hang on to their dollars to pay for their oil.
Again, this is out there mostly for confusion, and it's not going to really affect things.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as the euro came into existence, it was clear that oil would eventually also be purchased with euro, because the euro area is just as big as the dollar, the United States, a little bit bigger in population, a little bit bigger in production. Of course, Norway, which is part of Europe, is going to accept euros in payment for their North Sea oil. It's not a big deal. This is a kind of a diversion that's getting people away from looking at what really is important. What's important there is that our society is being misdirected. This isn't just about money. It's about the misdirection of humanity. And
mm-hmm.
that's what we have to stop, because with these weapons that are out there, these people will go all the way. If we let the power stay in their hands, we have to watch out for that nuclear disaster. We've already been saved twice. We've been very lucky. You know, McNamara, in this promotion for that film, The Fog of War, he said that the only thing that stopped an all-out exchange exchange of nuclear weapons in 1962 was blind luck. He said that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, civilization was saved again in 1983 when this Russian Colonel Petrov refused to obey orders and launch against us because they had a mistaken signal that we had launched against them. How long are we going to be lucky?
Mm-hmm.
We really have to take this into our hands now, and people, Americans, are the ones to do it because the center of this problem is here.
So how do we get a handle on this?
Well, we hold a monetary reform conference every year in Chicago. We've got one coming up in September. People can go to our website, and they can find it there. Our website, can I mention it?
Oh, yes, please do.
Oh, it's at all the W's, you know, monetary.org. And you go there, you'll see the announcement for our conference. Come to the conference. It's not expensive. We have our research is presented there in a book form, 720-page book that is easy to read, plain language. You can get the book there. It's going to take education of the people. It's going to take a degree of political organization. We're forming right now 14 AMI, American Monetary Institute, chapters around the country. There's a chapter forming in Portland, one in Seattle. We have a talk in Tacoma also. And there's one other town up there that we're forming a chapter in, and that's what I'm going to be doing when I'm out there on the West Coast. I arrive on the 23rd. Our first talk in Portland is on the 24th at the Portland Library, 801 Southwest 10th Avenue. And we'll probably start the talk at 6 p.m. We'll be there from 5:15. Come and hear about this. We have drafted legislation which resolves the problem. It's three-part legislation that resolves the problem. The first part is the nationalization of the Federal Reserve System, the way the Bank of England was nationalized in 1946.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not enough. The second part is that the banking system must not have this privilege to create money. And we have a very gentle, elegant way to do that that does not cause a crisis. And the third part is that we have to begin to spend U.S.-created money into circulation, interest-free. We start on infrastructure. We consider health and education a crucial part of infrastructure. We rejuvenate government at all levels so that this idiot who said he wants government small enough so he could drown it in a bathtub, you know, we send him somewhere else.
That's Grover Norquist for people
who
don't know.
And
I don't even know
his name and don't care to know it. He's an idiot.
Well, Grover Norquist, actually, he may be in some trouble stemming from this whole lobbying scandal that seems to be shaking Washington these days.
Well, he's in trouble with God, too, I think.
So are there any politicians who are willing to consider this idea or work for it?
I do go to Washington a couple of times a year, and I talk to political people, congressmen and senators, mainly their aides. It's hard to see the congressmen or the senators.
Mm-hmm.
We begin the education process with them. We leave them a copy of our research results in our book, and we communicate with them, and then they're now learning that there's an alternative. You see, they've been convinced, because it's propaganda for hundreds of years, that the only way the government gets money is to tax it from the people or to borrow it.
Mm-hmm.
And that leaves off the main important factor, which is that the government has the sovereign power to create money. Now, what the economists, starting with Adam Smith, father of economics, tried to do and have continued to do is to pretend that, government can't do that, can't trust the government. And in fact, when you look at the facts, all of the great hyperinflations that they advertise as government created problems, you find out that it was not the government that created the inflation.
Mm-hmm.
That it was either in some cases, as with the continental currency, it was British counterfeiting. In other cases, most of the cases, it was a private central bank that did the inflation. Germany, for example, was not the government. It was privately owned, privately controlled central bank at the time. People are shocked to hear that. There's been so much disinformation out there that when people get the facts, and that's what our book does give, when people get the facts, they can. Some of them get angry.
Mm-hmm. What about, don't have too much time left, but what about these community currencies, you know, like the Ithaca dollar, and these are sort of based on labor, where,
they can't solve the problem. This is a mm-hmm. big problem. We've got to solve the real problem. I look at those. The one thing I like about those things is that they may be in the process of getting some people educated. That's the main thing, to the fact that there is a huge, huge problem, but they will not solve it. You have to get the national system reformed. And the reason is that, first of all, it's a huge challenge to get any local currency started. It just doesn't happen. That's why there's only one in the United States in Ithaca, and they've only been able, the last time I saw they only had created $95,000 total. Well, that's not going to do it. But even if you were able to do that, it would not stop the continued monetary injustice being rained down on us from the national level.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to get that under control. And you know what I tell these people when I talk to their groups? I tell them, you guys already have a local currency. It's called the dollar,
mm-hmm.
and it's pretty good. There are just a few major problems with it that we know how to solve. Help us.
Okay.
Help us to solve it. The worry I have about the local things is that in some cases it's like a Pied Piper effect, and it distracts the youth away from political action. We've been taught for too long to stay out of political stuff because nothing you do will work. That's a lie.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been talking with Stephen Zarlinga, who is with the American Monetary Institute, and he will be talking Wednesday night at the Central Library, 801 Southwest 10th, sort of starting around 5:30, 6 o'clock, going on until the library closes. And he'll be talking about all this stuff. I like one thing you said about economics is, quote, a clandestine religion masquerading as science.
Absolutely.
Wish we had time to talk about that some more.
There's a whole lot on that. If you want, we'll do another talk.
Well, our time is up now. Thank you very much.
One last thing, Per. Well, in whatever we do, we try to have a good time doing it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Stephen Zarlinga, the American Monetary Institute.
Thanks so much, Per.